WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:10. It's Friday, May 6th, 2016. Hope you survived Cinco de Mayo, where you've finished another week. It's the start of another business day, but the weekend is right around the corner. Lots to talk to you about today. The Federal Reserve, interest rates, markets from around the world, jobless report later on today. But let's start with your market intel from around the world. From the WGN Market Desk this morning, Asian markets mostly lower in nervous trading today ahead of a closely watched U.S. jobs report that could interest may influence the markets later today and may influence an interest rate decision down the line. Also could impact the U.S. dollar. Yesterday on Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrials rose about 9 points, less than 0.1%. The NASDAQ and S&P sort of had a tepid day as well. The market's focus, as I said, is turning to this jobs report that's due out later today for April. Investors will be watching to see if it might affect the Federal Reserve's plans of raising interest rates at its policy meeting in June. Economists expect the report to show jobs grew by about 200,000 last month, while unemployment stayed at 5%. Speaking of the Fed, the San Francisco Fed President John Williams says maybe 2 to 3 interest rate hikes might be reasonable this year. Reasonable, not necessarily coming. 2 or 3 Federal Reserve interest rates this year. Again, I'll repeat that. He said this with CNBC yesterday in an interview.
We've seen over the last several years, actually much longer, the first quarter data tends to come in much worse, even after the seasonal adjustment, than other quarters. And this, my colleagues at the San Francisco Fed think that the underlying growth really is around 2% in the first quarter. So we'll have to watch the data as we get, you know, the data for March, April, and May going forward to see whether my forecast for better growth in the second quarter comes true.
2 to 3 interest rates later this year. Some people say we may not even have one. We'll talk more about this coming up with Paul Nolte in just a little bit. This morning, the Labor Department releases anxiously awaited employment data. Economists expect that report, as I said, to show about 200,000 jobs. Consumer credit data from the Federal Reserve also comes out a little later on this afternoon. Did you hear this yesterday? The Tribune Publishing CEO on CNBC says he thinks Tribune Publishing's worth $1 billion, perhaps. He says it is way undervalued. They're putting technology in place right now to try to figure out exactly how much money they can make by the number of people who are looking at the Tribune properties every day.
Not only do we have content, but if we were a startup, we have 36 million monthlies just at the LA Times. As a company, we have over 60 million monthly users. Our issue isn't content or users. Our issue is monetizing how much money we're getting per user. And right now it's pitiful.
It's the Tribune Publishing CEO, Michael Farrow, on CNBC. And this, just to sort of round out the opening of our show today, Rob Reiner. You remember Rob Reiner, don't you? Meathead from Archie Bunker, award-winning actor and filmmaker now. He was on the New York Stock Exchange floor yesterday. They pulled him up on CNBC as well. I laughed at this because, you know, we all watched Archie Bunker and laughed at Meathead. And he was actually asked yesterday about the atmosphere for comedians these days and Hollywood, about how you can't touch stuff. And then there was a really cool question at the end.
Well, I do think that there are comedians that certainly feel that at times, but I don't feel that. I've never felt that. You know, I came out of the 60s, and I was on All in the Family. We said what we felt, and I'm the same way now.
Speaking of which,
yes.
I'm dying to ask you, what do you think Archie Bunker would think of Donald Trump?
Total Trump supporter. No question about it. He's the first one to sign up for Donald Trump.
Total Trump supporter. 5:13 on the Opening Bell. Let's bring in Paul Nolte, who's here, Kingsview Asset Management portfolio manager. Paul, I wouldn't expect Archie to vote for anybody else, right?
Oh, absolutely not. He would be his candidate.
Yeah. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning.
How was the week?
It has been a rocky week. Again, you know, what's surprising with the comments out of the San Francisco Fed are talking about a couple rate hikes. The data this week doesn't support it. We saw a lot of retailers announcing yesterday they're struggling. They're not seeing as much revenue coming in. Traffic is down, et cetera. Some of it might be an Amazon effect. Amazon still had some very good numbers. But I think some of it, too, is just a lack of buying interest by the public.
And there was the weekly jobs report, too, was a little bit concerning. That kind of ticked up a little bit. People are being laid off. We'll see the jobs report later today. What do you think that's going to show? Is that going to?
Yeah, I don't have enough analysis to say it's going to be 200 versus 210 or whatever. But and it's also one of those reports that gets revised at least two more times. So what we're going to be looking for is about 200. The key is going to be to see how many people are coming back into the labor force if they think the workforce is strong enough to support it. And then to see what wages look like. And wage growth still has been fairly tepid, really, throughout this recovery.
Lots more to cover. I want to talk to you a little bit more about Donald Trump. Also moving forward, interest rates as well, and some other stuff. We're with Paul Nolte this morning.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Asian markets were mostly lower in nervous trading ahead of a closely watched U.S. jobs report that may influence interest rates and the value of the U.S. dollar. The Dow rose 10 points yesterday to 17,660. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 both closed lower. Goldman Sachs is reportedly planning more job cuts. The Wall Street Journal reports that Goldman will eliminate about 100 positions from its sales and trading division. Overall, the debt trading group has lost about 10% of its staff this year. Amazon is expanding its fleet of delivery jets by taking a 30% stake in Atlas Airline. That company will operate 20 Boeing cargo planes for the e-commerce giant. Amazon is trying to build up its own delivery network and become less dependent on UPS and FedEx. Venezuela faces yet another shortage. Beer is the latest victim of that country's economic crisis. The largest brewer in Venezuela has been forced to halt production. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 520. We're back with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management, portfolio manager, free portfolio advice for you. Listen very, very closely. He could help make you rich as we head into the weekend. Paul, I was listening to the guy, the San Francisco Fed guy, and I almost thought, well, is he smoking something? Because everybody until now has been saying, you know, maybe one and maybe not even one. And so that's why I think maybe this is a trial balloon he's putting out there, maybe, do you think?
The Fed's been pretty good about doing that for the last year, year and a half. They have always said, you know, we anticipate that we're going to be raising rates. The economy is relatively strong, and we want to get back to a normalized rate environment. The problem is the economic data really doesn't support it. And they've opened the door, as we've talked about before, they've opened the door to looking at the global markets. So if the global markets are in turmoil, it makes it very difficult for them to raise rates.
And speaking of the Fed yesterday, Donald Trump on CNBC, CNBC had all the news yesterday, by the way. He said he would replace Janet Yellen, even though he thinks she's doing a good job. Had plenty to say about how he's the debt king, how we need to refinance our debt, renegotiate all of our trade deals. What did the markets make of that? What do investors make of that?
Well, as you can tell, the markets really weren't paying too much attention. They finished violently unchanged yesterday. but when we sit down and talk to clients about their own debt, and you know, I'll use the analogy of your house, refinance your house at these very low interest rates, push it out 30 years. You want to borrow long when rates are low. And so he's taking that to the U.S. debt. The U.S. debt right now is primarily short term. 3 month, 6 month T-bill rates are 0.25%. So we are paying on that debt 0.25% for that debt. And if we do refinance it and push it out 30 years, 30-year debt is going at about 2.6%. So effectively, our interest payments would go up tenfold by doing that. Again, you're going to pay it one way or the other because we have debt that we're not doing a great job of reducing. And if and when rates go up, we're going to be paying for it at some point.
He also talked a little bit about renegotiating these trade deals. That also really didn't move the markets at all, but did raise a little bit of concern among some of our foreign allies, especially Mexico, on Cinco de Mayo about this. Is that even something that's on the table or possible?
With Trump, anything is possible. Just give him a microphone and he'll say almost anything. The issue really is going to be, how is it going to be negotiated? He's not going to be able to say, okay, here's the trade deal and that's done. It's got to go through Congress. And so much of what he is talking about still needs congressional approval. So it's going to have to make its way through Congress and go through the normal channel. So it's going to be a tough process, but certainly he's talking his book, if you will.
Yeah, and one just final comment on Trump. One of the analysts on another one of the shows yesterday said that he's acting like this is a job as a CEO that he's taking over, and the presidency is not that at all.
No, it's very much working with Congress, trying to be legislative, and certainly it's been one of the knocks on Obama, President Obama, is that he doesn't work with Congress. He kind of says this is the way it's going to go, and if you like it, great. If not, oh well. So we may see more of the same style, if you will, with Trump. It's just going to be very much more over the top.
The dollar has raised a lot of concern, the performance of the dollar this week. How does that impact portfolios, investments? I know you're heavy into bonds, but is this hurting people?
You know, it's been a very strong dollar for the last 2 years, culminating with the end of last year. And the race to debase, if you will, by countries around the world, it's part of the reason why they've been cutting interest rates with the intent of cutting their dollar to make their goods a little bit more enticing to foreign buyers so they can get their economies going. The problem is what's good for me isn't necessarily good for the rest of the world. So the dollar coming down has helped our exports a little bit, but it's also helped gold. And gold has been kind of the anti-dollar. As the dollar was very strong in the last couple of years, gold has gone down. And now that the dollar's come down, gold has picked up a little bit. The fact that interest rates are negative in a lot of countries, the cost of carrying gold is zero. So actually, gold is a better place to put your money than in a negative interest rate environment.
I know emerging markets are one of your favorites as well, but does the renegotiating talk affect the mentality, the mental state of some of these emerging markets perhaps, and make them nervous to where they might make a mistake in their country and hurt? Just sort of in a roundabout way, or no? Am I stretching that?
It might be stretching it a little bit. I mean, when we look at emerging markets still are very dependent on commodities in general. So commodity prices being very weak as they have been the last couple of years, part of the reason why a lot of countries, Brazil, Venezuela, et cetera, have been struggling. So in order for those markets to really turn around and do well long term, not just for another couple quarters, we need to see some strength in the commodity market. Commodity market strength is going to be better global growth. You know, if we can get some good global growth, we'll see strength in commodity markets, and those emerging markets will pick up as well.
I was chatting with Orion Samuelson yesterday, and he talked about how the farmers are really gotten a jump on the season this year, at least here in Illinois. A lot of Midwestern states, it looks like it's going to be a good year for crops, commodities. Is that a place where we might invest?
You know, it's tough because what's good for the consumer in the way of, say, corn, we have bumper crops. Supply and demand would say we have a lot of supply, which means prices are going to be coming down. And that's actually been hurting the farmers the last couple years. Those grain prices have been down significantly from 2-3 years ago. So it's going to be it's good. We're going to have a lot of grain around, but it's not going to be priced all that well.
So now I'm going to do a Kentucky Derby tie-in here. Let's put our money on a good horse for the weekend. What do you got for us?
You know, we've been playing the conservative game for a while, and it's a horse that we're not getting off of just yet. We're staying with the bonds. We do like the conservative, bigger cap U.S. stocks. A little bit of international exposure, but this is still a time to be playing it safe.
All right. Paul Nolte, Kingsview Asset Management. So you can sign up for Paul Nolte's notes at Kingsview Asset Management, kingsview.com/WGN. And it's a free newsletter. It'll help you with your investments. And you can also give Paul a call, and he'd be glad to help you as well. Good to see us always. Have a great weekend.
Absolutely. You too. Thank you.
All right. 5:28 on the opening bell.
He's not one to spout off about his job, but for the past 10 years, Chicago Park District Chief Engineer Dan does quietly make sure Buckingham Fountain runs like clockwork. He says the process begins in February.
Our landscape crew comes out and sweeps out all the debris and anything that is gathered over the wintertime. And then there's one day that's basically assembly day where all of our trades come out.
This week, Dust has been testing the waters, making sure the fountain is ready for its summer debut.
Pump number one runs all day long. Pump number two and number three only run for the major display every hour on the hour.
And with the tests complete, it was my turn to start the fountain with a simple click of the mouse.
All I have to do is click yes and it'll go.
Mm-hmm.
The original 1926 pumps and motors turn on and water flows within minutes. And it's a lot of water.
A full display, if you were putting out almost 15,000 gallons per minute, minor display, it's about 8,000 or 9,000 GPM. The pump itself holds 1.5 million gallons.
Dust gets a little misty when talking about his job.
It is a treasure, so we're guarding the treasure here.
The fountain opens this Saturday. It runs every day from 8 to 11 through mid-October. I'm Kim Gordon, and now you know who does that.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
It is 5:38. Welcome back to the program, The Business of Sports. Up next, Mark Carman is with us, The Carm on Twitter. Mark, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Good to see you.
Did you see this out the window here? I don't know. To describe it for folks, since I've been doing the show since January, the windows here have generally been this darkness where you can't see anything because it's pitch black outside.
Yeah, it's a beautiful morning,
yeah.
Steve. It's
going to
be
daylight?
We're going to have some. There's daylight. Yeah. There's 70 degrees. I'm going to leave you and listen to Steve Cochran on my way home. I'm going to jump on the tennis court at about 6:15 this morning. It's going to be beautiful. I'm going to try to get Dave Bennett to actually leave the Cochran Show and go for a run with me real quick to just see the sunrise. Did that already happen? Maybe we can't do that.
No time. Yeah, he's busy. But you know what? It's a beautiful day for a ball game, or how about two ball games?
Yeah, a rare opportunity. Today, actually, and tomorrow. Today a little bit easier. Tomorrow would be tight. But the Cubs playing at 1:20 at Wrigley Field, and the White Sox at 7:10 at U.S. Cellular Field. Very rare that both teams are in town at the same time. Normally it doesn't work out that way, obviously. We all know this. And rare that you'd have the day-night. So you could go to Wrigley today, and then perhaps you take the L on down to U.S. Cellular Field and just live a day-night doubleheader at both parks. Pretty awesome.
I can't think of a better way to spend the day, actually, even if you're not a White Sox fan. The Cubs I can get. I'll spend all day at Wrigley Field, but hopping on the L, heading downtown. How much would that cost us, Mark?
Well, I got it broken down here, Steve. Do you like to sit in a premium seat, or will you take the cheapest seat to get in?
Now, the premium seat, do they deliver me pizza and beer, or do I have to get up and get it?
No, you're going to have to pay for that. But you can right now, at this very moment, you could go on the Cubs website. If you wanted to sit in Section 19, which is right behind home plate, seven rows from the field, you can buy a face value ticket for a mere $139, and you could be sitting in the roughly 10th row right behind home plate. Dave Ennett will not be doing that, I'm guessing.
Dave Ennett, can I borrow 130? What was it?
139. Okay. That's to get you into the park.
That's to get you in, yes. Yeah. And by the way, if you don't want to risk that ticket will be gone and walk up to the Wrigley Field box office, say, around noon today, all the fees and everything, those two tickets, I'm assuming you're going to take someone, will cost you $325.72. So it rapidly goes up with the service fees online. But a face value is $139. Now, if you want to sit 538 row 2, which is your upper corner right field, upper deck, last section in the park, those seats are available as well. Row 2, $13 a shot. So you're in for $26, much more cost-effective.
Those
perhaps
are the Bob Uecker seats. Steve, I could see you being very comfortable up there.
So, in other words, back when I was a kid, my uncle used to take me to games. We'd wait out back in the back there by Waveland Avenue, and halfway through the game, they'd let us in free. That's not going to happen probably today.
Not unless you know somebody at the gate, perhaps. You never know what people do nowadays. By the way, beer at Wrigley is $8.75 now. So
that's for domestic, though. What's an import?
So look at Dave on top of. I think the import, I'm not 100% sure. I want to say $9.50. Mm-hmm. Yeah, something.
I see Steve grabbing a Mai Tai, though.
Yeah.
One of those Mai Tais in the
And some of that new ballpark caviar and some of those other fancy things that they're serving.
Yeah, I mean, hot dogs are $6 now, and if you go out, if you're a bleacher ticket-going person, I'm not exactly sure what hot dogs is, but I'm sure there's a premium price on that as well. White Sox, if you're interested, cheapest seat at Sox is $7 if you want to go upper deck. So that's
good value.
Good value, right? And if you want to go...
And also do traffic reports from up there, by the way.
That's true. It's a very solid elevated upper deck. Down low, behind home plate will cost you $67. Now, these are Wrigley's seats that I gave were a little bit closer to the field, but you can get a lower level White Sox ticket all over the park tonight, and they're $67. So double that up, that you're at 134, which is less than the price of one ticket at Wrigley.
And so, Dave, I asked Mark this and was kind of surprised by it because, you know, there have been seasons, last season part of it, you would see lots of empty seats at some of these the ballparks, mm-hmm. especially Wrigley Field. And I said, you know, the Cubs are hot this year. You're probably not seeing that. But Mark says there are some empty seats.
Well, there were. I noticed last night there were 37,000 was the announced attendance last night. But there were some empty seats, which kind of surprised me. This is a big series. It's been hyped a lot, deservedly so. And it was interesting because you also had the White Sox playing at the same time against Boston. So you had four first-place clubs all playing at the same time. And it's the first time in baseball history you've had four first-place teams all play in the same city on the same day. And obviously you couldn't be at both games unless you watched half of one, half of the other. But, yeah, there were some empty seats last night, Steve. And there have been some empty seats on the south side where their attendance issues, I think, have been pretty well documented. But the assumption out there is that you can't get into Wrigley Field this year. And based on last night, I don't know that that's necessarily true.
And I was actually surprised going online today just looking at the holes because the Cubs are home now for
months.
And there's only one game listed on the schedule, which is next Saturday. I believe they're playing the Pirates with limited availability. So every game coming up here, there's tickets.
You know, one thing to keep in mind, school is still in session.
Right.
And once school's out, it's much harder. But still, last night's a school night, and the game ended, what, around 10, I believe, something like that. So it's tough. By the time you get out of there, it's well after 10. You're home by midnight. Kids have to get up. People have to go to work.
Yeah, and Mark also said something about the weather. I mean, Cubs fans are generally a little bit hardier, but is that possible that it's been too cold for people to?
Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I hear from a lot of people who say, I'm going to wait till it warms up a little bit. The problem is you wait too long, and then it is tougher to get the tickets.
Right. But if you're looking for value, now is the time to go. Mm-hmm. And neither team could be any hotter. I mean, they're both in first. And I know the White Sox have dropped the last couple, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, they're both in first place right now, which, I mean, how often has this ever happened this deep in the season?
Never.
Right.
Yeah, so. And this is going to be a great trivia question for later, Dave. Thanks. I'm going to pull that on somebody later So there's the first time that all four first-place teams have played in the same city.
It's the first time there have been four first-place teams playing on the same day in the same city.
Amazing. Great stuff. Yeah. Dave Ennett, sports director here at WGN. Mark Carman, The Carm on Twitter, Dave Ennett, at Dave Ennett.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
5:49. Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Dow futures pointing downward this morning, off about 41 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are off a bit as well, all waiting for the payroll and monthly jobless report coming out a little bit later on. Let's find out how commodities are doing. Here is Orion Samuelson.
Steve, good morning. And as we head into the Mother's Day weekend, let's begin with sharing with you the 2016 National Farm Mom of the Year, selected in a two-week vote that concluded yesterday. And the America Farmers Mom of the Year is Kentucky farmer Mary Courtney, who started her farm with her husband Shane, now produces corn, soybeans, burley tobacco, mixed vegetables, green bell peppers, eggplant, cucumbers, squash, and zucchini. And she is the first ever regional or national winner from the Bluegrass State. Congratulations to America's Farmers Mom of the Year, Mary Courtney, in Kentucky. Market-wise yesterday, not a good day in the grain market. The funds were playing again, and they took profit. And that brought about a sharp drop in soybeans, and wheat and corn also traded lower. But soybeans lost the most yesterday, with the May contract down 19¾ cents a bushel. May corn dropped 1¼, and May wheat dropped 7¾. But at the livestock trade yesterday at the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle futures rallied for the fifth day in a row, with the June contract up $2.17 a hundredweight. And the May feeder cattle contract ended higher, up $2.97 at $147.90 a hundredweight. Pretty good day in the livestock market yesterday. May hogs up $0.15 a hundredweight. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. And you forgot to mention, Mary probably does all of that stuff on her farm before we even get up in the morning at 5 o'clock. Congratulations, Mary. Last week, Southwest Airlines surprised a lot of folks unexpectedly, dropping airfare a minimum of $10 for round-trip flights. Sometimes other airlines do follow suit, sometimes not. Let's find out what other airlines are doing today. Rick Cini from FareCompare.com joins us this morning from Dallas at FareCompare and at Rick Cini on Twitter. And Rick, this morning, you know, the question is, are those other fares being lowered? And what is just generally the process that goes on with these fare decisions?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit surprising to see right ahead of the summer season, which is the busiest season, to see Southwest drop prices. There is a smattering of matching from the other big airlines, United, Delta, American, as well as Alaska and some of the other airlines as well. So we saw Frontier drop prices as well. So this is good news for consumers. I was actually looking out of Chicago, and there are some decent deals sort of around the United States and even into some of the Caribbean and Mexico beach destinations for summertime as well.
What is the process that happens here, Rick? Because a lot of times you look at these airfares, at least I do, and I think, well, are they doing this just kind of willy-nilly, or is there some rhyme to the reason?
There's a little bit of rhyme or reason. You know, the reason to drop airfares is to fill up airplanes, right? So they haven't had a whole lot of trouble the last few years filling up airplanes because they just haven't added a bunch of new aircraft back since they, you know, all this consolidation has been occurring. Now, what they have been doing is replacing old aircraft in their fleets, just not adding a bunch of capacity. And, you know, from a competitive standpoint, we just have a lot less competition. But when they do drop prices like this, other airlines will look to see, has my schedule better or not? Should I charge more for my nonstop? Is Southwest, you know, cutting into my bookings? And if so, they'll match that price as well.
How closely does the government watch all of this to see if there's any collusion among the airlines?
Not very. They do have, the airlines are required to submit a 10% ticket sample in arrears, 6 months in arrears, and that's where you see some of this data that comes in. But that's a very small part of what the Department of Transportation does. Policymakers are supposed to be using that data to make some decisions. It's really not enough good data to actually make better decisions. And right now, during a presidential election year, we won't see a lot of things happening.
Before our discussion this morning, I went online and was just kind of looking around to see what was happening at airports across the country. And just as we have talked about before on the program, the TSA lines are out the door.
Yeah, no, the TSA, it's going to only get worse as the summertime kicks in. We're right at the, you know, the height of spring travel. Summertime travel is going to be worse. They actually cut back on some TSA agents, thinking a lot of people will be doing pre-check. Not enough people have signed up. They expected in the mid-20 million. They've only gotten just under 10 million to sign up. This is going to be a big issue over the summer. So I would note for everybody, I know a lot of people are traveling this summer. It's the one time you have to head to the airport early in the last 4 or 5 years.
The head of the TSA was before Congress recently and really got a tongue lashing about all of this. Have they made any efforts to hire any people quickly before the summer?
There is some effort to do that. I think the other problem, well, the other thing they're trying to do is promote the pre-check program or the global entry program, which includes pre-check along with getting through customs and immigration quicker. To get that up from 8 or 9 million up to 26 million, which is what their goal is, there's no way that's going to happen between now and the end of the summer. So not enough time to get enough people out there. So just be aware there's going to be long lines.
You spoke earlier about some of the airlines upgrading their equipment, their getting new aircraft. We saw Delta this past week and a half buy some jets from a company that you wouldn't normally think of.
Delta's, you know, they're actually buying jets just wherever they can, really. I mean, you have the two big manufacturers, Boeing and Airbus. You also have some of the regional jet manufacturers, Bombardier. You also have Embraer as well. So, you know, wherever airlines are looking for particular aircraft, they definitely are looking at the future, too. A lot of these aircraft orders go out even 15, 20 years.
The Delta Airlines also announced, got a lot of publicity over this past weekend with announcing the new RFID tags for luggage in hopes of preventing lost luggage. What do you think about that?
Yeah, this is what happens when airlines make $25 billion in profits. So they've actually been looking at this for a long time, putting RFID. So essentially what the airlines would like to have, if possible, is the ability to track your bag just like you do FedEx. You know if it's out for delivery. You know where it is. You know if it's left the airport. And add that to their mobile app so that you can track your bag through. A lot of people just don't check bags domestically, but most people do when they travel internationally, and that's where you're going to see it first.
It's funny talking with people who have travel plans or have just traveled. They're less angry with the TSA, more angry with the airlines, specifically because of when they hear the profits. The airline industry tripled its profits last year. That's what people seem to be most angry about at the airport.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it that the huge windfall profits that they've had is really because of two factors. One is the price of oil dropped from over $100 a barrel to nearly $30 a barrel over the last 18 to 20 months. That's one. At the same time, we didn't have an economic shock in the United States. Typically, when something like that occurs, it's followed by an economic shock and demand is depressed. In this case, demand actually is better because people are saving at the pump on their cars and using those discretionary funds to travel.
You touched on this earlier, but a couple of good fares to get us out of town for the weekend.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, look, I was actually looking out in June, but over the weekend, if you look at the prices, you can go to places like Canada. Vancouver over the weekend is just under $350 round trip. Last year at the same time, it was $450. Seattle, $200 round trip. Miami in the $170 range round trip. So there's tons of places you can go this weekend, as well as late June when typically the prices are a bit higher. Those prices are only right now 20% higher. Chicago, again, along with Dallas and Seattle, are three of the cheapest cities in the country to fly.
Rick Cini, faircompare.com, at faircompare, at Rick Cini on Twitter. And that's the opening bell for this morning. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning.